Hi there, all you Sandbox Radio heads. This is Leslie Law, your host and one of the producers of Sandbox Radio. Thanks so much for listening. This episode, Swing Time, was recorded in front of a live audience on June 16th, 2014 at ACT Theater in Seattle, Washington. The show featured Cascadia Big Band, The Riveting Rosies, Tina Rowley, and special guest music director, Angie Louise.
Sandbox Radio.
New plays from Elizabeth Heffron and Juliet Waller-Prezan. Musical guests, Cascadia Big Band. The Latest Adventures of Cousin Katie by Scott Augustson. Our Angel Detective series, Markheim Heats Up. PSAs from Wayne Rawley. Seductive trio of crooners, The Riveting Rosies. Join us. Plus all your favorite Sandbox Radio players and music from the Sandbox Radio Orchestra, led by our very special guest music director for tonight, the divine Angie Louise. So, sit back and relax as we take you into the world of Sandbox Radio Live.
Mind if I swing?
Sure, go ahead.
Isn't that Travis over there?
Yeah, weird. He's standing by the slide eating Pop Rocks.
What's he drinking?
I think it's a Coke.
Gosh! Someone call the doctor.
Someone call the nurse.
Hey, there's the stupid lady with the alligator purse.
Hey, look. We're almost swinging together.
You know what that means.
Yeah? Do you?
Yes.
Are you ready for that?
It's not real.
Yes it is.
No, it's not.
How do you think your parents met?
My mom met my dad at Kinko's.
Nuh-uh.
Uh-huh.
That's just what they said.
What are you talking about?
There are some things that we are led to believe that are not true.
How did your parents meet then?
They said they met at work at a restaurant. My mom got sick last year.
So?
She got real sick and she thought she was gonna die, so she told me the truth.
Did she die?
No, she got better. She smelled funny for a while. Now she smells normal again.
What did she say?
She told me that when she was a kid, she was on the playground at recess and my dad got on the swings. Usually they didn't let the boys and girls swing together.
You're not allowed to swing with me.
No one is stopping me.
Where is recess attendant Kate?
Kate went back to Scotland.
Oh.
Yeah, I overheard her talking to Mrs. Stan.
I have to go back to Scotland.
Why, Kate?
We don't marry in the same way as here. My groom is waiting for me. He's in my bed right now.
In your bed?
It's the tradition in our tiny Scottish village. If the bride has gone off to make her fortune as a recess attendant in another country, the groom can try to sneak into her bed. If he succeeds, he must stand there until she returns. Then there is a wedding.
He has to stand on your bed until you get back?
On one leg! I must hurry!
That's weird. Why aren't we allowed to swing together anyway?
I don't know. Hey, look! We're almost swinging exactly side by side.
Oh my goodness! Who's on the swing?
We are?
Well, what's done is done. I'll go call the commissioner and your parents.
Are we going to get suspended?
What's the big deal?
You're not going to get suspended. You're going to get married.
Gross!
It's 1976. I don't believe in marriage.
Well, you should have thought of that before you got on the swings together.
We're nine. We don't know what you're talking about.
We were just swinging.
Your parents can explain it.
Can we keep swinging?
Sure. It's too late now.
So, I pick my nose a lot.
I fart in my bed, then hide my head under the covers to smell it.
This is our future.
I was gonna do tetherball!
Whoa! Your parents got married because they were swinging together on the swing set?
Yes, and so did yours.
Are you sure?
Unless they were like Megan and Daniel.
Weren't they sitting in a tree last week?
Megan Daniel sitting in a tree. K-I-S-S-I-N-G.
Hey, Daniel.
Hey, Megan.
Come closer.
Now what?
I love you.
Will you... Cigar?
If I don't sleep, I'm gonna die.
I've had it!
Oh, man! Huh. What else do you know?
A lot.
How come?
I'm a know-it-all.
Really?
Sure am. Just like my dad. My mom tells me that all the time.
So, what else can you tell me?
You know when Arlo's mom was in the hospital?
Yeah.
We need an x-ray. Stat. Call the ER. We're going to have to operate.
What happened here?
My back! My back! I think it's broken!
Who did this to you?
Arlo, my son! Oh, he didn't mean to do it. I swear, he was stepping down the sidewalk and he didn't see the crack!
Let's get you into surgery.
Whoa!
I know, right?
What else?
Remember Mrs. Thomas, the lunch lady?
The one who was always telling us not to swallow the apple seeds?
Yes.
Oh, this is the tiniest apple ever. I better be careful. Oh, no, what was that? What have I done?
Oh, no!
Yup, the apple tree grew so big, she had branches coming right out of her ears. She had to join the circus. She works in concessions.
Ah, man. There's Samantha.
Cute dress, Samantha.
It's my little sister's.
But your sister's only four.
I know. I'm just so short. Maybe I'll grow next year. Anyone want a sip of my coffee or a puff on my cigarette?
No, thanks.
Johnny, do you really think I'm stunting my growth?
Yeah. Hey, I didn't say that out loud. How did you know?
It's written all over your face.
What?
Nice handwriting, by the way. Your cursive is impressive.
Oh, you don't have to read it. It's probably stupid.
Like, right now it says, I wonder what it would be like to kiss both girls at once. Is that a ménage à trois? Why am I thinking this? Girls are gross. Wait. Do I really believe that?
My worldview is shifting pretty quickly right now.
Bye.
So, we're gonna get married.
I guess so.
Will we live at your house or mine?
I've got a monster under my bed.
Well, if I don't close the toilet seat before I flush, I get sucked in. It's so gross.
Huh.
You are kind of cute.
And you're really good at math.
Thanks.
What do you want to be when you grow up?
Astrophysicist. How about you?
Tow truck driver.
Our future is looking pretty good.
Yeah.
Weird.
What?
I suddenly feel funny.
Yeah, you look a little pale.
My head hurts.
Oh my God, you're covered in spots.
Oh, my tummy hurts too.
Wait, what were you doing last Thursday at recess?
I was in the nurse's office getting burn ointment. Stupid hot lava.
Oh, then you missed it.
Missed what?
Please form a line. Come on, people, there's enough for everyone. Next.
Will this hurt?
Just a little. Roll up your sleeve. Circle, circle, dot, dot. Now you have the cootie shot.
Thanks!
I guess there's no cure for cooties.
Not yet.
I feel so weak.
Our lives were just beginning.
It was good while it lasted.
I'm gonna jump off the swing now. If I make it beyond that line, then I'll get to punch Alexander in the arm.
That's cool!
Yeah, it was nice swinging with you. Geronimo!
Ow!
Dum, 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 da dum, 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 da dum, dum, da dum, dum, dum. All the day long, whether rain or shine, she's a part of the assembly line. She's making history, working for victory. Rosie, the Riveter.
The Riveting Rosies, a creamy, tight harmony girl trio of curvaceous crooners, sing golden age tunes with an intoxicating sound and pert, sassy, vintage pinup style. The Rosies met in the factory while the boys were overseas. But when the boys returned and the gals received their marching orders back to the kitchen, our Rosies just couldn't go. From riveting to riveting. Our Rosies are a yesteryear Thelma and Louise, plus one. Catch them if you can. Contact the Rosies at therivetingrosies@gmail.com to book them for your public event or private party today.
Working on the assembly line.
The following message is brought to you by Lifelong.
Hello, welcome to Lifelong Thrift Store. Can I help you find something?
Why, yes, thank you. I'm looking for a bowling shirt. One that is authentically vintage, but not so authentically vintage that it's actually valuable. And that has a team logo for a butcher shop, a tool and die maker, or some other anachronistic small business emblazoned across the back that I can wear ironically, but secretly think that it actually looks good on me. And if it could have an embroidered patch on the front breast bearing the name other than my own, that would be preferable.
That entire wall over there.
Whoa! Totes, awesome!
Did you just say totes?
Wow, this is great. When I walk into the Sunset Bowl tonight, everyone will think I just threw on this super cool t-shirt because it's all I had clean or something. Perfect!
Sunset Bowl isn't there anymore. Developers tore it down and built condos.
Say it isn't so.
Years ago.
Well, I guess I'll just head up to Leilani Lane's then.
Sorry, I closed that too.
Harsh.
Yeah, things change, I guess.
At least you guys haven't changed.
Lifelong?
You dudes have been right here on Capitol Hill like forever.
We've been helping people living with HIV/AIDS in Seattle since the mid-80s.
See? Exactly the same.
Not even close, dude. Our mission has expanded, and we're growing all the time. We'll always be committed to ending AIDS in Seattle, but we also serve people with other chronic illnesses. We provide housing, insurance, and prevention services to low-income individuals around the state. And our food program, Chicken Soup Brigade, is the only one in the Pacific Northwest that delivers medically appropriate meals to people with chronic illness free of charge.
That is extremely cool.
Yeah, and this summer we're moving our kitchen to a larger facility in Georgetown.
Whoa, you're leaving the Hill?
Oh, don't worry. We're staying on Capitol Hill too. We're opening a new client services center right here where we'll offer housing services and medical case management just like we've always done.
Huh. You could do all this just by selling ironic bowling shirts?
not hardly. Shopping at our Capitol Hill thrift store, it's a great way to help, but there's lots of ways to get involved. You could volunteer in our kitchen or at events like the Seattle AIDS Walk or Gay Bingo. Just go to lifelong.org to find out who we are and what you can do.
What's the web address again?
www.lifelong.org. Check it out. Help Lifelong help people on this hill and all over Washington State.
Lifelong. Opening doors to food, housing, and health for people living with HIV/AIDS for 30 years.
Totes!
Sandbox Radio.
There, but for the grace of God, goes Jimmy Connors. By Tina Rowley.
In November of 1982, during my freshman year of high school, I went with a group of friends down to the Seattle Center to watch an exhibition match between Jimmy Connors and Bjorn Borg. I wasn't a tennis fan, but I went where my friends went, and that day we were going to some tennis. What I didn't know was just how tennis I was about to get. We were seated in the northeast corner of the arena, right behind a ball boy. After one grueling volley, Bjorn Borg lost an important point to Jimmy Connors. He turned back to our ball boy to get a ball, and Bjorn Borg and I made eye contact. I shrugged and tipped my head sideways, smiling like, hey, what are you gonna do? And Bjorn Borg mimicked my move and shrugged and smiled right back to me like, hey, what am I gonna do? I was electrified. We had communicated. I suddenly adored both Bjorn Borg and tennis itself. The bag of Skittles I was clutching became the Shroud of Turin. I put it in the clear pencil bag in my notebook where I would see it every day and didn't move it for the rest of the year. From that point on, it was go. I was changed. I became a 24/7 all-tennis establishment. It's important to stop and note that I have the ability to become a little obsessive. Every so often, I imprint on something like a baby duckling, and I suckle it until I realize that I'm not, in fact, ingesting the meaning of life, and I eventually let go. But until that time comes, I am latched on and no sense can be talked into me. I thought of Bjorn Borg all year and wondered if he thought of me.
Who was that adorable woman who shrugged at me from behind the ball boy? She's so understanding, she relaxes me. She'd make a wonderful wife. She's not that small. And I don't care what anyone says. I love braces on women.
If I was given a homework assignment, I wrangled Bjorn Borg into it however I could. It would appear that I talked at length about Bjorn Borg to anyone who would listen, as 90% of the people who signed my yearbook that year found polite ways to beg me to stop.
Have a fun summer, Tina.
Keep playing tennis.
Maybe one day you'll be as good as...
And then a gigantic handwriting.
Bjorn Borg!
I subscribed to Tennis Magazine. I watched every match on TV that I could. And when spring came, I forgot that I hated playing sports, and I joined the school tennis team. I had to be in the throes of something deep to make that kind of move. All my life, I'd squirmed my way out of any unnecessary physical activity. Nobody in my family was an athlete. We were ethereal weaklings, and we competed on a daily basis to see who among us was the limpest and sickliest. Whoever won was showered with attention and sympathy, so it paid to be lame. I lied my way out of any activity in PE that intimidated me, which left nothing but crab soccer and the thing where you all get together in a big circle and wave a giant parachute around. But this tennis thing, this was all right. We'd line up in the gym after school and practice our strokes against the wall with our coach, Mr. Case, striding around and calling out adjustments.
Tina, don't grip your racket so tight.
Mr. Case was an adorable, chipmunk-faced man, so even if he yelled, he was never scary. And I was the worst person on the team, easy. I owned the bottom seat all season, except for one week where I beat my friend Sandy and enjoyed the second worst position for a few days, which gave me a case of disproportionate swagger. But if the team had been seated according to who was happiest, I would have been the top seed with a bullet. I was never discouraged by my poor play. If my racket made contact with the ball and made that foomp sound I adored, I was aces in my book regardless of the trajectory the ball made afterwards. If I didn't fault while I was serving, I felt like Martina Navratilova, Chris Everett Lloyd, and Carling Bassett all wrapped up in one. Carling Bassett, if you don't remember her, was the teenage sweetheart of American tennis back then. Maybe you saw her in the movie Spring Break. I know I did. She played a young tennis star trying to keep her eye on the prize, and Susan Anton played her mom. I'd say it belongs in any critic's top 20 tennis movies of the spring of 1983. And you can probably pick up a VHS copy on eBay if you'd like to check it out. While I regularly played intra-team matches to defend my bottom seed standing, my services were generally not called on when it came time for matches against other schools. But once, Sandy and I were called into the show for a doubles match against Roosevelt High School, whose worst two players would face off with the two of us on our own turf. I think you can safely say that this was not a majestic sporting match. This was not a display of the human form and its possibilities. Mr. Case had been yelling,
"Footwork!"
at me all season, which I dismissed, because as I saw it, you primarily played tennis with your hand. But these girls from Roosevelt took my theory to whole new levels. They seemed confused about their responsibilities on the tennis court, to the point where I wondered if they were maybe serving out some randomly generated tennis-themed detention for something. Sandy and I creamed them by merely moving our feet at all. When June came, and the end of school with it, my parents planned a family trip up to Orcas Island. We'd be spending a couple of weeks in our normal spot, which didn't have a TV. Those couple of weeks happened to correspond with Wimbledon, which I was going to have to miss. I feel for my parents when they delivered the news, for I shat my pants and lost my mind. It was the sob heard round the world. And they ended up bribing me to calm down with a Walkman, which I'd been lobbying for some time. The Walkman was pretty cool, I have to say. And the Police had come out with their album Synchronicity that year, which sounded extra bitchin' coming in both of my ears like that. I listened to it over and over, which unlatched my obsession mechanism and got it ready to pivot. When we came home from Orcas, it wasn't Bjorn Borg, but some kid named Boris Becker who had won Wimbledon.
Yeah! Boris! Boris! Boris!
Who is this Johnny come lately? I'd never heard of him, and I'd been into tennis since November. The sport was going downhill. And Bjorn Borg, well, I had to ask myself, was he really here to stay? He was cool, sure. He was the Iceman after all. But Sting now, Sting was the king of pain. What girl doesn't love the king of pain? Ask any therapist. By fall, I was completely latched onto the Police, and I'd abandoned Bjorn Borg and tennis like a couple of ratty old teddy bears. Bjorn Borg was the Iceman? Please, I was the Iceman.
All right now, everybody ready for Angie Louise?
When you're touched by a bad man, you feel a
his finger on your soul. The thing about a bad man, he kinda makes you lose control. He made me feel so holy, he made me feel so grand, he made me feel so, I don't know, he was a bad, bad man. Not a big man, and not a tough man. Sometimes I thought he wasn't quite enough, man. But now I see the truth, the things he made me do. And if I can't blame him, then nobody can. Cause when we burned that village, it seemed like something nobody planned. But now it's plain to see, he put a spell on me. He was a bad, bad man. And I feel much better. Ooh, I said I feel much better. Ooh, well it felt so good. But now I understand, I was touched by a bad, bad, bad. It wasn't only me who did it, it was our mayor too, our lawyers and policemen, the whole production crew. It made us feel so holy, hey, made us feel so grand. It was a deadly game, but I just can't be blamed. It was a bad. Sometimes I thought it wasn't quite all man, but now I see the truth, the things he made me do. And if I can't blame him, then nobody can. And when we raped and pillaged, I hope you understand, it wasn't me who led the spread of the band.
The year is 1944. We are traveling to that moist pocket of our national backwoods, the Pacific Northwest. World War II still rages on both fronts. But we are safe for now, here on the home front, riding on the wings of a fearless American eagle. we soar high above the erratic coastline of the Puget Sound. And what do we see from our aerial perch as we near the Queen City of Seattle? Look, there below, the industrious shapes of 100,000 ant-like workers, almost half of them women, pounding out the vehicles of war, our own Rosie the Riveters, and a few Ralphs, too, building long-range B-29s for the Boeing Aircraft Company, and Sherman tanks at Pacific Car and Foundry. Industrious Americans living in makeshift quarters, working round the clock towards victory. But these young folks like to play hard, too. Jitterbugging into the wee hours at the Spanish Castle or Belltown's Trianon Dance Parlor or the Showbox. Ah, the Showbox, glory of First Avenue. Just 5 years old, boasting three shows nightly with a 10-piece dance band, five acts of vaudeville, and the most up-to-date amenities, like modern fluorescent lighting. We should also note that you can find silence in this West Coast town as well, especially along Jackson Street in what had been a thriving Little Tokyo, where the muffled quiescence of plywood over empty store windows now tells a frightening tale of fear, betrayal, and exile. Yet, this heinous calamity has been put aside in the minds of the current residents to be pondered more deeply in later years, when and if there is a victory. Right now, there are dim outs, civil defense sirens, and ration coupons. But what's this? Our eagle is circling back, swooping down past the dusty gray bricks of Pioneer Square, back up First Avenue to the Showbox. For there is someone in this establishment we did not notice the first time. A slight little man seated at the console of a magnificent 3/8 Wurlitzer pipe organ, a musician by the name of Eddie Z.
Good evening, ladies and gents. My name is Eddie Z. How's everybody doing tonight?
Eddie knows what it's like to watch life fly by. Already in his 40s. With flat feet and a slight limp, Eddie tried to enlist but got nowhere fast.
Sorry, son, you're 4F.
4F?
4F! We got no use for you.
So, Eddie does his bit for the war effort with his hands. He's an organist of some renown. There is magic in his fingers. Sit him down at an organ, any organ. The wheezy Kimball at the Neptune, the Egyptian's 2/16 Robert Morgan with its missing pedals, even that gilded Wurlitzer at the Paramount, and he can play the pants off it. Yes, Eddie is an organist with a passionate following, but what he doesn't have is a dame, a girl, a partner for the bumper cars of life.
I sure wish I had a girl for the bumper cars of life.
Oh, there have been a few near misses. The sales girl from Crest Department Store.
That'll be 38 cents.
Or that clumsy cocktail waitress in the cloud room.
Oops! Hope that ain't your only shirt, sweetums.
Even a fishmongress from the market.
Fish.
In fact, when Eddie plays, there's something in the music that makes women look beyond the pertinent facts of his physical demeanor. They don't seem to notice his lack of height, or his feet, or that one crater-like smallpox scar centered squarely on his forehead, a landmark that earned him the nickname Cyclops back at Broadway High School. The scar his geometry teacher, Mrs. Klumpf, would use as a way of illustrating the universal principles of isosceles triangles.
everybody take a look at Eddie's forehead.
Gross.
You see how equidistant that scar is from both eyes?
Uh-huh.
Now, if that scar is point A, and each eye is B and C, and the angle of A is 110 degrees, what are the angles of points B and C?
This next one goes out to Wanda from Associated Shipbuilders, Rhapsody in Blue.
When Eddie was at the console working those keys, the women just seemed to flock to his organ.
Oh, Eddie. You sure know how to pull out all my stops.
Thank you.
Eddie, you don't mind if I just touch your instrument, do you? Just right there?
Be my guest.
That vibration, it just gives me the willies.
Say, Eddie, can you play Stompin' at the Savoy on the Glockenspiel?
Can I? I can play it with Glockenspiel, xylophone, and sleigh bells.
Yes, Eddie's seductive finger work acted almost like a duck blind. And swept aside his less attractive features.
Gee, Eddie, you're good. You're really, really good.
Unfortunately, whenever the music stopped and he stepped away from the keyboard...
Well, Wanda, looks like this is your place.
Yeah. You know, you're awfully short.
Yes, I am.
And what's that on your forehead?
Minor pockmark, nothing to fear.
Oh, jeepers, that's funny.
Well, say...
Look, Eddie, I appreciate you walking me home and all.
Can I call on you this weekend?
This weekend? This weekend don't look so good. See, I gotta paint my mother's toenails. She wants them patriotic for the 4th of July.
Oh, okay. Well, what about the following weekend?
Nope.
The one after that?
She's got 10 whole toes, Eddie.
I see. Well, what about...
I'll see you around, okay?
Okay.
Yes, this was the predictable pattern of Eddie's life. Until one night, in the wee hours, he was playing a lonely pickup shift at the Garden of Allah on 3rd Avenue.
Wowzer! Boy, that's a sad song you're playing there, on your organ.
Not so sad.
Sad to me. I just got off of the night shift down at Boeing Building 2. I could use something a little more up-tempo.
Are you a riveter?
Me? No, I'm not a riveter. Look at me. I'm 200 pounds. Those Rosies are all so dainty. I'm Bertha. I'm a bucker. I work the bucking bar, baby.
The bucking bar?
Yeah. Them rivets get shot into those sheet metal and bam! Us buckers, we gotta stop them and grind them down. And grind them down, see? Make them nice and smooth.
I see.
You wanna feel my forearm?
That's all right.
Feel my forearm. Go on. I won't call the management.
Well...
Go on.
If you insist. Oh.
Yeah. All muscle.
That's really something.
Say, you're pretty cute.
I'm short.
That's cute to me.
And I've got flat feet.
Well, I'm a size 11.
No kidding.
Listen, Eddie. I ain't tired and I like you. And I can't stand going back to that converted gas station they got us housed in. All my clothes smell like gasoline. How's about we do the Pike Street run?
Wait.
Hit every tavern and billiard club all the way up to Ernie Steele's.
You want
to
do the Pike Street run with me?
Yeah. Why not? What are you doing?
I'm standing up.
You're standing?
Yeah.
Is one of your legs shorter than the other?
Uh-huh.
And there's a cigarette burn on your forehead?
Yes. So, do you still want to do the pike run with me?
What do you take me for? Some cold-hearted floozy?
No, I'm just...
I'm a bucker, baby. You think I get waylaid by outer appearances? Only thing that can waylay me is your heart.
Well...
And hell, I'm the one who invited you. So what do you say?
What do I say? I say...
Gee, that sounds like...
Yeah.
In the mood?
That's what I am.
Eddie Z. I can already tell that little organ of yours is just gonna wrap itself so tight around my big ol' heart.
Thank you. You're listening to Sandbox Radio Swing Time. Going to be in the Seattle area on September 8th. Come see us live. Tickets on sale now for Sandbox Radio Back to School at acttheater.org. This show is made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. Find out how to contribute and get podcasts of prior episodes at our website, sandboxradio.org. Now let's get back to Swing Time.
Sandbox Radio, Sandbox Radio, Sandbox Radio.
I'm a Markheim, a sort of angel. Markheims are the black ops. We do with things other angels can't or won't. The fix upstairs pulled me out of retirement for a mission down in this soggy town. But when it was done, I didn't go back. I had questions. Now I'm walking neutral in Seattle, half fallen, looking for the answers in what we angels call the show. But I gotta watch my back, because things can always get uglier.
Previously on Markheim.
A huge, sopping, long-necked creature lurches toward me out of the lake. Its head bobs bizarrely at the end of its extended neck. Its puffy, pale hand holds up a dripping scrap of parchment to my face.
This.
That's my ticket back upstairs. I wrestle myself over the barbed wire and land at the edge of the reservoir. I jump in. I'm flailing in utter fathomless darkness. No, stop, don't panic, stay in control, the water's fine. There's nothing beneath me, just blackness, blankness, and then something happens. Something grabs my leg!
And now, episode 12 of Markheim by Paul Mullen.
Dom, what's happening?
The Markheim's gone under, Sarigel.
Something's pulling him down.
God help us.
Yeah, that'll be the day.
Who are you?
Ask your boss.
Oh, God. Samael Hasatan, you have no business here.
It's the show, Rags. My business takes me everywhere.
Oh, God. Sam, help me.
Which is it, Markheim? You want capital H him or me?
You, please, help me, Sam. It's climbing me.
Shit. Okay, it's okay. It probably hasn't fully formed yet.
What?
Do you trust me?
Trust you.
Step aside, demon.
You and you. Go to hell, quick.
You will pay for them, anathema.
Markheim, look in my eyes.
Okay.
Do you trust me?
Do I have a choice?
I told you before, Markheim, you always have a choice.
Fine, I trust you.
Good, now close your eyes.
Oh, God.
And leave him out of it.
Fine, they're closed.
Now, you might feel a slight burning sensation.
Okay.
And when I say slight, I mean worse than anything you've ever imagined.
Please, it's wrapping around my neck.
Okay, here we go. You still with me, Markheim?
Yes. There's a difference between fire and light, but to most people it doesn't mean much. Angel, devil, who cares which of the cartoons hovering above your head you go with? But let me tell you, if you're getting dragged under dark waters by a not yet fully formed mystery monster, a bit of light is not enough. You're gonna want some fire on your side.
Okay, you can open your eyes.
I find myself at the bottom of the bone-dry reservoir basin, Sam looking down at me from the edge.
Haven't done anything like that in a while.
Then I see the Archangel Ragel's smirking face pop over the edge of the other side.
Time to come home, Markheim. Your presence is required in the City of God.
Never going back up to the fix. Walking neutral.
Your neutrality is not recognized by the seven archangels.
He ain't neutral anymore. He's walking with me.
I'm walking with Sam.
You will both be called to account for this. Sir Michael has been roused. He's coming to this world.
Well, great. Let me know when he sobers up. And until then, give him my regards. You know where to find me.
I will oblige you, sir.
Times have changed, Raggy. Take my advice. Drop the chivalry and pick up a shiv.
I will oblige you.
What was it, Sam? That thing in the water crawling up me?
I'm gonna have to get back to you on that. The question of the moment is, what are we gonna do with you?
That's up to you now.
Ah, don't worry. You're no good to me, smoke to hell. And you ain't exactly a soldier. As far as I'm concerned, you can go back to your perch on the harbor steps and just keep your eyes open.
I left there because my cover was blown and I was a sitting duck.
That's your post. Get on it. I'll be in touch.
So that's that. I'm working for Sam now. Everything's got a price. I look around. Whatever it was in the reservoir with me, there's nothing left of it now. Sam burned everything away but me. I climb out of the basin and walk naked through Capitol Hill. For the most part, invisible, but it doesn't work on everyone.
Hey, Markheim.
Oh, hey, Smiley.
You're Jaybird naked, you know that?
Yeah, I'm trying to keep invisible.
Christ, I wish it worked on me.
I lost the clothes they sent me down with.
Get some more.
I don't exactly have a debit card.
Wait under this tree. Value Village opens at 9. I'll get you some threads.
Once again, I owe you, Smiley.
Not this time. You put some clothes on, I owe you.
After getting into the used clothes Smiley buys for me, I make my way to my old post on the harbor steps and sit, sore thumb for all to see. I got no illusions, I'm alone. I can feel the eyes of the fallen burning into me, down from windows and balconies, up from the drains and sewers, snipers of hate. After a few days, Sam sends a messenger.
Hello, Markheim. Remember me?
Fallen Angel? Should I?
Yeah, you should. It's on account of you. I was smoked to the crisp.
You're the chub from up in the fix who gave me my original mission.
I'm a crisp runner now. Signals and communications. I'm to keep you briefed.
Briefed on what?
The war. City of God is pouring forces down into Seattle. It's understood on both sides, fix and crisp, that this is where Sam is gonna make his stand. The fixed forces are setting up a huge base camp at the I-5 colonnade. The colonnade's got plenty of good cover, easily defended. Still, Sam's raining hellfire on him pretty regularly from the stair complexes across Lake Union. Oh, and one more thing.
Yeah?
Sam sent a suicide scouting party rappelling into the COG base camp.
Mongiriando merdo kai morti fiskimo parazo!
My demonic's rusty. What's it mean?
Eat meat shit and die, fix filth.
Ah.
But here's the nub. One of the demons reported back before getting blissed.
What did the demon say?
Jeffangelo Michele estam la spettacolo.
Archangel Michael's back in the show.
Oh. Well, shit. Did he seem sober?
No details like that. It all went down too quick. But best guess puts the City of God's full force now at 400,000 and growing. Sam's got maybe a quarter of that.
And yet they're not moving?
No, not yet. Most of them aren't used to working wet. And Sam's guerrilla tactics seem to be keeping them confused. Only Archangel Iophiel showing any initiative or effectiveness beyond the perimeter. Any demon she finds, she's smoking all the way out.
Harsh.
It's worse for fallen angels like us.
What can they do to us? We can't be smoked to nothing.
No, but they can bliss box us permanent and dump us in the sea.
Shit.
I don't know about you, but the idea of being buried in the deep inky with what's crawling in it these days.
Hey, sorry I got you into all this.
Yeah, well, forget about it. Work is work. You're to keep watch. I'll be back at you soon.
And so I keep my eyes peeled. Except when I fall asleep, which is a problem, because, as I may have mentioned before, on several occasions, angels don't sleep. And they sure as fuck don't dream. Liv, why are you crying?
I'm not crying because I'm sad. I'm crying because I'm happy. I want you to meet Jonah, my stepfather.
How's it hanging?
Liv, what's going on?
He's not really my stepfather. He's my actual father. Isn't that the greatest news?
Swell.
And we're getting married.
Congratulations.
You're not supposed to congratulate the bride, stupid. You're supposed to say best wishes.
I don't make wishes. I lack the knack.
That's dumb. You can make any wish you want.
Yeah? I wish I was meat, so I could put my meat fist through your stepfather, real father, fiancé's stupid meat face.
That's rude.
Don't come back here.
You talking to me, Clarence?
I'm talking to Liv. Don't come back, sweet girl. There's a war on. You can't see it, but it's tearing everything apart, and my days are numbered.
Oh, look. It's our table.
Just sit down and act discreet, Sam.
Always, Iafiel.
This is our last meeting, so let's get to the point. These things crawling out of the water. We've had 3 come out of Lake Union in the last week.
Any luck stopping them?
None. We throw everything at them. Utterly blast them with celestial light. They barely shrug, just keep marching inland.
Well, they're Nephilim, of course.
They were supposed to be gone forever.
And who promised you that?
You know who.
And where is he?
I am not getting into that again. Just tell me how we stop them.
We join forces, of course. They're neither demon nor angel now. Only makes sense it'll take both fire and light to drop them.
You want to join forces with the Fix?
Nope. I want to join forces with you. Wake up, Markheim. No more dreaming!
Didge?
That's better.
What happened to your hands?
They got cut off, remember?
Both of them?
Sure. Had to even things out now that I'm dead, didn't I? Hey, but don't worry, I'm so much happier this way.
Doesn't seem right.
Right as rain. You're just like me, you know, we're 2 pennies in a pocket. We both do a lot of sitting around and waiting. Neither of us is alive, and we're both in love with Liv.
That's crap. I'm not in love with Liv. She's little more than a girl, and I'm an angel, sort of.
Come on, come clean. You're no angel, not really.
You saying I'm fallen? Because I already know that.
No, no. To be fallen, you have to fall. To rise, you have to fly. To be true, you have to move. And to love, you have to die.
You know I can't die.
Yeah, time was you couldn't dream either. But look at you.
My eyes flick wide open. I'm awake. This is real. The show. As real as it gets, for whatever that's worth. But at least I'm not dreaming. I'm sure of it. And here's the bitch about that. It means I know it's real somehow when another lanky giant, as tall as Hammering Man, crawls out of Elliott Bay, dripping sound, water, and seaweed. He ducks his bobbling head under the viaduct and stalks on toward harbor steps. From above me, demons shriek, unleashing unholy hellfire at him, but it barely slows him down. He's coming right for me, and as he stalks up the steps over me, he looks down into me with fish-blind eyes.
Cousin.
5 burning demons stick to him like glowing ticks as he walks up into the city. Christ, I wish I was dreaming.
The following message is brought to you by West of Lennon, Fremont's home for live performance.
Hey, dude, why the long face?
Nothing. Fremont sucks, that's all.
What? Fremont is one of the most eclectic and alive neighborhoods in Seattle.
If by eclectic and alive you mean sucks, then I agree.
Why would you say that? It's got great food, great bars, artists, music. Look around. Fremont has it all.
Yeah, but it doesn't have a super cool, wildly thriving theater / performance rehearsal space / art gallery and bar. Don't you see the problem?
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't. Using Fremont's iconic, if not somewhat controversial, statue of Vladimir Ilyich Lenin, I've looked everywhere. I can't find it.
Everywhere?
Everywhere. In all three directions of Len and I have searched for a place in Fremont where one could have a nice glass of wine while enjoying dazzling, entertaining, and intelligent live theater from Seattle's most entertaining artists in a comfortable, versatile 88-seat black box theater with adjacent rehearsal space that could be rented for all manner of events and live performance.
Wait a minute. How many directions?
All three. North, south, east. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I didn't go.
West of Lennon.
West of Lennon. Ah, there it is. My rage subsides.
West of Lennon is Fremont's premier home of live performance with gallery exhibits and a bar for patrons just a few blocks west of the Lennon statue.
Man. I can't believe they don't have a website I can check out. How can they be so stupid?
Visit westoflennon.com for a show calendar and more information.
Righteous.
Wasn't brilliant for the Mudville Nine that day.
Peanuts, get your nice hot peanuts right here.
Peanuts.
The score stood 4-2 with but one inning more to play.
Now batting, Joe Cooney.
And then when Cooney died at first,
you're out.
And Barrows did the same. A sickly silence fell upon the patrons of the game.
A straggling few got up to go in deep despair. The rest clung to that hope which springs eternal in the human breast. We thought, if only Casey could get but a whack at that, we'd put up even money now with Casey at the bat.
But Flynn preceded Casey.
Come on.
As did also Jimmy Blake.
Oh.
And the former was a hoodoo. And the latter was a fake.
He's a phony.
Hot dogs, red hot, ice cold beer.
Beer here.
So upon that stricken multitude, grim melancholy sat, for there seemed but little chance of Casey's getting to the bat.
But Flynn let drive a single to the wonderment of all.
Oh, and Blake, the much despised, tore the cover off the ball.
And when the dust had lifted,
don't
and they saw what had occurred, there was Jimmy safe at second. And Flynn a-hugging third. Then from 5,000 throats and more, there rose a lusty yell.
It rumbled through the valley. It rattled in the dell.
It knocked upon the mountain and recoiled upon the flat. For Casey, mighty Casey, was advancing to the bat.
Casey.
freeze in Casey's manner as he stepped into his place. There was pride in Casey's bearing and a smile on Casey's face. And when responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat. No stranger in the crowd could doubt 'twas Casey at the bat.
We love you, Casey!
Go get him, boy!
Come on, baby!
Ten thousand eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt.
5,000 tongues applauded when he wiped them on his shirt.
Then, while the writhing pitcher ground the ball into his hip, defiance gleamed in Casey's eye. A sneer curled Casey's lip.
And now the leather-covered sphere came hurtling through the air. And Casey stood a-watching it in haughty grandeur there. Close by the sturdy batsman, the ball unheeded sped.
That ain't my style,
said Casey.
The right one,
the umpire said.
From the benches, black with people, there went up a muffled roar, like the beating of the storm waves on a stern and distant shore.
Kill him! Kill the umpire!
Shouted someone on the stand.
Kill him!
And it's likely they'd have killed him
had not Casey raised his hand.
With a smile of Christian charity, great Casey's visage shone. He stilled the rising tumult. He bade the game go on.
Play ball!
He signaled to the pitcher, and once more the spheroid flew.
But Casey still ignored it, and the umpire said,
"Strike two!"
Fraud!
Cried the maddened thousands, and Echo answered,
"Fraud!"
But one scornful look from Casey, and the audience was awed.
They saw his face grow stern and cold. They saw his muscles strain. And they knew that Casey wouldn't let that ball go by again.
The sneer is gone from Casey's lip. His teeth are clenched in hate. He pounds with cruel violence his bat upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball. And now he lets it go! And now the air is shattered by the force of Casey's blow!
Oh, somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright, the band is playing somewhere, and somewhere hearts are light, and somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout, but there is no joy in Mudville. Oh. Mighty Casey has struck out.
Strike three! He's out of there!
Twice.
twins! For loving arms embrace you, for eyes I lie to each time I face you. With two hearts twice as true, what couldn't four lips do? When four ears hear you saying I'm yours, I'll die by your pleasure. You great big baby cans, I wish that I were twins, so I could love you twice as much as I do.
Jenny Darmond, Candace Donahue, and Billy Wildrick. You've been listening to Sandbox Radio.
My cousin Katie from Ketchikan. My cousin Katie from Ketchikan. She's the girl that you call when you need a friendly smile.
Used to taste better, richer, fuller.
Knock. Hey, neighbor.
Coffee's ready, for what it's worth.
It's so quiet.
Yeah.
I can't believe she's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know who I mean, right?
My cousin Katie from Ketchikan.
And she's in a pad?
A pod.
Ooh, a pod? Tell me more.
Marco, I don't know if I'm up for exposition.
Please?
Okay. When rent soared in the early 21st century in Seattle, apartments sprang up to provide small but affordable centrally located living options. They did an end run around city code with the counted units by the number of kitchens, so eight residents could share a single kitchen and the developer could say, we've got one apartment. A genius way to promote environmentally friendly density, a micro-living sophisticated solution, but there's a growing faction of NIMBYs, folks who love an idea until they find out it's being done on their block.
So NIMBY is an acronym for not in my backyard?
Yep. NIMBYs are afraid the pods will drive down property values and flood the neighborhoods with undesirables.
Thanks.
But who would want to live in a place that small?
Well, I myself would rather live in the heart of the city in an apartment the size of a pug's ass than a rambling ranch house in White Center.
True dat.
Well, Katie, here's your front door key and the key to your unit.
My pod?
Yes, Katie, your very own pod.
Thanks, Alex.
Remember, no pets, no smoking, although we haven't made rules about vaping yet. It's a gray area.
Vaping? That's so Seattle.
Well, I'll leave you to it.
Oh, my pod. It's so tiny. I can sit on my little bed and just lean over and get a small beer from the itty-bitty fridge. It's like Alice when she eats the Eat Me cake or an Ann Getty's baby sleeping in an acorn shell. Or a grizzly bear hiding in a Volkswagen. After how big everything is in Alaska, this is refreshing. Oh, who could that be? One of my podners?
Hello, Katie.
My cousin Katie from Ketchikan.
You know who I am?
Oh, yes.
Have we met?
No, but maybe you've heard of me. Rhonda from Rhode Island.
Rhonda from Rhode
Island. Oh, you're that Rhonda.
Look, under ordinary circumstances, the whole big estate, small estate feud would prevent me from even speaking to you.
And I would have to defend the honor of the land of the midnight sun. I might even be brusque or use coarse language. But I have a feeling you have something pretty darn important to say to me.
Follow me.
Okay. How long have you lived in a pod, Rhonda?
Ever since I caught my no-good wife, Infogrante, with a one-eyed bisexual shower curtain salesman.
I'm sorry.
Oh, you're sorry. I'm sorry. Whole damn world sorry. Okay, here we are.
It's our snug little kitchen / laundrette.
Look in the oven.
Oh, baby, Jesus riding a pony in the circus parade. Rhonda, that's a time bomb.
Oh, you bet your tangy fruit salad it's a time bomb.
Red wire to the timing mechanism cut. C4 properly isolated, backup ignition circumvented. This bomb has been expertly defused.
Yeah, that would be me.
So, somebody tried to blow our pod to kingdom come? Do you think we should call the police?
Oh, don't even think about it. We of the pods take care of our own. The world doesn't care about us. They think we are micro-dwelling freaks. They call our commitment to urban density unnatural and disgusting. But we in the pods have our own brand of justice.
I was hoping you'd say that. What's the plan?
Let's split up, do some recon, ring a few bells, bend a few ears. We'll rendezvous back here.
10-4.
Oh, try starting with Evie in number 2. Oh, she's a regular curtain twitcher. The poor man's Gladys Kravitz.
Copy that. Katie, welcome. You know me?
Old Evie keeps an ear to the ground.
I'm looking for information.
Well, you came to the right place. Nothing gets past Evie. See Lorelai in number 1 and Ryan in number 3?
Uh-huh.
Lorelai works in the floral department of the grocery outlet, and she brings Ryan the leftover daffodils.
Oh.
He works the mailroom of a law firm and brings her stamps from all over the world.
Oh.
There's a Podmansa brewing.
That's sweet.
But it may be doomed.
Doomed?
Lorelai gets a lot of mail from doctors and hospitals. Oh, she's so pale. I worry. And Ryan, I think he's afraid to love again after his divorce.
Oh.
Something is not right with Sean in number 4. He's left a dish or two in the sink. He gets packages from Singapore and Shanghai. You'll see him walking around with mismatched socks.
Well, my grandma Shirley had some funny sock habits, but she's lost 3 toes and an earlobe to frostbite.
Oh, and Carl. Strange sounds come from Carl's pod.
Is that a manual typewriter?
Mm-hmm. A Smith & Wesson.
Corona! It's a damn Smith & Corona! I am trying to write a novel! And I can hear every word you say, you nosy shrew.
He hardly ever comes out. But I have had a peek. He looks like Uncle Fester, but sexy. Know what I mean?
I do. We had a mayor in Ketchikan who was sort of a sexy Marty Feldman. But Evie, do you know anything about the time bomb in the oven?
Oh, do I ever? And I think this will make your jaw drop.
Uh-huh.
I am spilling some mighty big beans here.
Uh-huh.
The bomb was planted by...
Oh, poison dart from a blowgun. Did not see that coming. Darn! So close. But like my grandma Shirley used to say, don't cry at a hobo camp wedding. Let's see who's next door in number 5.
Quiet, guys. Quiet. Hey, you must be Katie.
My cousin Katie from Ketchikan.
I get that a lot.
Well, I heard you and Evie talk. Thin walls, so I got the lowdown. I'm Chaz.
Nice to meet you. I thought we couldn't have pets. Ruff, ruff.
Katie, silly, these aren't pets. They're my service animals.
Are you blind?
No, Katie. This is Rupert. He's a Great Dane Whippet mix, or a Grippet. Sometimes I'm unsteady and Rupert is just there for me. That's little Weedles. He's there if I get shaky. Oh. Langston is a therapy dog if I should get a vague malaise or launch into a fugue state.
Who is this little fella?
That's Buttons. He's actually Rupert's service animal.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Cheryl. This is Katie.
Oh, I know.
Hi, Cheryl.
Oh, is that Evie's body?
Yeah, but I'm hoping she's just paralyzed. What's your story, Cheryl? Why are you living small these days?
I'm hiding.
Oh?
Yeah, see, I was homeschooled.
How was that?
Fine, until puberty.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
But I did really well. I graduated early and transferred to home college and got a full scholarship to home grad school. But then I got an offer for a home career and I ran. Please don't tell anyone.
Lips are sealed. I gotta go see what's up in apartment 8.
I wish I was homeschooled.
No, you don't.
Hello, number 8? That's funny. It's empty, except for these dolls and chairs. There's something I'm missing. It's like I got all the pieces of a puzzle in front of me, and I just gotta put them together.
Gray area.
Our own brand of justice.
Stamps from all over the world.
One-eyed bisexual.
I can hear every word you say.
Hot Uncle Fester.
I can't believe she's really gone.
Aha! I got it! Rhonda! Rhonda! It's Alex the manager. Rhonda, you're tied up. And then let me guess, Alex is standing right behind me.
Bravo, Katie. You figured it out. A minute too late. Dim bulbs, you podsters.
Speaking of dim bulbs, do you mind me switching on the light? If you're gonna kill me, I'd like to see your face.
Do it.
What I can't figure is, why? Are you working for the NIMBYs?
I don't give a pug's ass about the NIMBYs and their precious property values. They can hang by their privates for all I care.
Can I take the duct tape off Rhonda's pretty mouth?
Oh, please. Allow me.
Ow! Oh.
Sorry.
Okay. If you aren't NIMBY, why the kettle corn were you trying to kill us?
See, here's the thing. I grew up in the 1970s. My parents were swingers. Every Friday night, a key party. Every Sunday afternoon, a game of human Lazy Susan. They made me mix the Tom Collinses and serve the Chex party mix. It was awful. And everybody knows the pods are just an excuse for swingers.
I hadn't heard.
I'm going to destroy all of you pod by pod, every filthy, dense, living degenerate in the city. Freaks! Freaks! You are all freaks, I say.
Not so fast, Alex. When I switched on the light, what I really did was switch on Rhonda's webcam. She has a podcast about pod life. Her audience are exactly the people you just swore to kill. In Seattle, there are 28 pod buildings full of freaks, as you call us. I think I hear them now.
One of us! One of us!
Knockety knock knock.
Katie? Is my cousin Katie here?
Lena! Marco! Hi!
Oh, we came by to say hi and see your pod.
We brought you a little housewarming thing.
It's a plant.
It's a real small plant because, you know, your pod is small. And a cupcake.
One of us! One of us!
Is this a bad time?
Well, why don't you come back in 20 minutes? Give me a chance to straighten things up.
Great!
Are you gonna call the cops?
Nope. As my good friend Rhonda says, we in the pods have our own brand of justice.
One of us! One of us! One of us!
No!
One of us! One of us! One of us!
I think
I'm gonna like it here.
Next time on Cousin Katie.
Hey, Evie.
Hey, Katie.
I'm so glad that dart gun didn't kill you.
Not that easy to kill old Evie, kid.
I was gonna ask you, Alex said the pods had a bit of a reputation for a place for getting jiggy.
Well, it's actually kind of true, Katie.
How did that happen?
We're just easygoing folks. We live and we let live. If it feels good, why not? You share a stove with someone and things can get a little hot. FWB.
FWB? Oh, friends with benefits.
Bingo. They got that sort of thing in Alaska?
Evie, the winters are long and cold in Alaska. We got some pretty creative ways to stay warm.
Welcome to Pod Life, Katie.
Episode, the Sandbox Radio Players were
Eric Ray Anderson,
Laura Kenny,
Mick Kuhlman,
Charles Leggett,
Andrew Litsky,
Amy Love,
David Natale,
Peter Dylan O'Connor,
Rebecca Olson,
Annette Tatongi,
Catherine Van Meter,
Sean John Walsh,
Richard Zyman.
Give it up one more time for the Riveting Rosies! And Cascadia Big Band! And our very special guest, the magnificent Tina Rowley! With the Sandbox Radio Orchestra, Dan Tierney on the drums. Dave Pascal on the bass. Rob Whitmer, accordion, clarinet. And on the keys, our guest music director tonight, the brilliant Angie Louise. And I'm your host for Sandbox Radio, Leslie Law. So, Catherine and Annette have some lyric cards because now's the time in the show when we want you to sing along. I think you picked up the tune. Here we go.
Thank you.
go. Good night.
Sandbox Radio Swing Time was written by Scott Augustin, Elizabeth Heffron, Paul Mullen, Juliet Waller-Pruzan, and Wayne Raleigh. I Wish I Were Twins by Frank Lesser was arranged for the Riveting Rosies by Linda Dowdle. Follow Tina Rowley online at her blog, Gallivanting Monkey. Bad Bad Man by Angie Louise with the Love Markets appears on the Love Markets CD, World of Your Dreams, available through CD Baby and iTunes. Find more info on upcoming Love Markets shows at the-love-markets.com. This recording was engineered by Christopher Allen Stewart and mixed by Dave Pascal. Our sound engineer for Swing Time was Max Langley, and our stage managers were Holly Boone and Colleen Nielsen. Subscribe to the podcast in iTunes and Stitcher, and keep up with us on Facebook and Twitter. See you at the next live show.